Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, Ian and I dived into diagnosing the conversion rate problem on a lighting website, and we went through the process that we go through in order to understand what the problem is. It was a very casual conversation, and you'll have to make allowances for the fact that Ian was walking his dog and had his newborn baby in a pram at the same time. So we apologize for the background noise, but we thought it was a useful conversation anyway to share with everybody. So let's get started. Hey Ian, how are you?
Hey Mark, how are you doing? Good to chat.
Good.
How are you?
So, I'm all right, yeah. Basically, we thought we'd just record a conversation that we would normally have. So basically, someone's written in about conversion rate problem, and it's in the lighting business. And we thought we'd just go through the diagnosis of it. So that then if you look at your own site and you've got a conversion rate problem, then you can look at how you would diagnose that. So hopefully you can kind of follow along. So this is a lighting business. Yeah. We don't know anything. We can't see the analytics of this business and we can't see any stats, but what we're going to just talk through is where we would look and where we would start to look. So,
it's the holy grail question. Well, yeah, it's the whole year of question. Everybody in e-commerce understands conversion rate. Everybody wants it, and you're quite right to want it. And
it's fundamental.
Most common, it's exactly. It's like how many people come into the store and buy something, and it's the most common question we get asked. Now, I think, I think looking at the conversion rate and what we actually did to understand conversion rate was probably the backstone or the cornerstone and the backbone of our whole approach, which was splitting it into the three, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I think also at the same time, looking at conversion rate, if you're just looking at what the traditional Crow is like conversion rate optimization services. Now, when we were just doing that, I think what the frustration was that, we might not be able to find the conversion rate problem on the site in that it might have been something outside of that. It might have been pricing. It might have been what the market's doing. It might have been what, the policies of the company was and all that kind of stuff. So I think it was realizing that if we wanted to grow e-commerce revenue more, we had to look outside of just kind of moving blocks around on the screen and also think about how the customer was hitting the site and was what the flow was, and that kind of led to the call.
I think the mistake, can you hear me? I think the mistake that people make when they think about conversion rate is they end up going, oh god, we need to get a conversion rate up, and they look at the website they go through it and they go, oh right, and they go, oh that's not right, oh there's a drop down there that doesn't look that good on the checkout, or the product pages, I think we should make that look a bit prettier. And so there's absolutely no logic. It's just all guessing, and it's all just, oh, I think that. Mm. And I've actually been in very expensive, two-way mirror glasses where clients, e-commerce brands, and I've done this a few times, have interviewed people using their website, and it's all the sort of, I don't think it's that user friendly, or I don't think that search drop down looks that pretty. And it's, there's absolutely no logic or framework or priority of understanding, well, is that an issue? How is it performing? Is it going to impact any revenue? Where do you start? And that's so common.
way the human mind works. I think you get an idea into your head and then you pay consultants to tell you that's the problem. Or you go and do your customer interviews and you go, yes, I knew it. And it's like, well, you know, I had the same thing the other day. Yeah. Like I was selling the book on Facebook and I was convinced that I needed PayPal. And I thought, oh, I'm losing loads of money because I've not got PayPal. And I actually looked at the stats and I was like, well, nothing's really changed. You know, it didn't actually make as much
difference yourself.
As I thought.
You convince yourself that that's the problem.
I was absolutely convinced in it. Yeah, but it was just my gut feeling. And sometimes that gut feelings are good sometimes, but sometimes they are wrong. And if you can back them up with data.
I thought you look for reasons to reinforce that that's the right decision. But anyway, you know, so the first thing that we needed to do was put a framework around conversion rate and understand, okay, well, what is it? What is conversion rate? Mm. And that's where we broke it down into three steps that we're probably quite well known for now is the add to basket, basket to checkout, and the checkout to order. And to understand, what are those like? And that, so that's the basic three steps of conversion rate. And unless you understand those three steps and you know how your site is comparing against those three, you don't stand a chance in hell to improve your conversion rate. You know, you've got no idea. It's impossible.
Yeah, because often sometimes you might find, sometimes people might find, so let's take this lighting business. So let's say this lighting business finds that it's got a really good add to basket rate. Maybe it's got a 10% add to basket rate, something like that. And then the basket to order rate is actually really low, like 20% or something like that. Now, sometimes you might think, oh, well, that's because people are, you know, getting to the basket page and then they're getting worried about shipping, or they're getting worried about something else. But you know, sometimes it might happen is that the product page is not good enough, so it's not telling people the delivery cost, and so therefore people are adding something to the basket to find out the delivery cost. So that's forcing people to add to basket when they're not actually ready to actually buy it. So sometimes when you have a basket to order problem, it's actually the product page that's the problem. So it can be a bit confusing because you think, oh, I've got a really high add to basket rate. My product page is really, really good. But it's actually because you don't have enough information on the product page. So what you first got to do is make sure you go through the book and go through the product page checklist and just make sure you've got all those T's crossed and all those I's dotted and make sure that your product page is correct. Because then once you've got that, then you'll know for sure whether or not you have a basket to order problem. And if that basket to order problem is still there and you've still got a low basket to order, then you'll know that you've got some friction in the basket because you've given them all the information on the product page they need. And then you can look at the basket page, knowing that the people who are getting to that point are motivated to buy that product. And therefore, you've got another problem, which might be, you know, your returns policy. It might be your shipping policy, or it might be the fact that at that stage, if you're selling other people's products, once people have added something to the basket, they go and price check. And then they go and price check and maybe they find other people who've got a better deal, or maybe they go off looking for
coupon. They're just sometimes not ready to buy. I mean, that's the biggest reason people abandon their baskets is because they're just not ready to buy. Not that there's anything technically wrong with the website. You just haven't convinced them that they should A, buy this product, or A and B is buy from you. I mean, that lighting company is probably quite a good example that they initially found that the add to basket stat was lower than we thought it should have been. So it was about 3.5%. So that means that only 3.5% of everybody landing on the product or going to the product page is adding to the basket. And, you know, when we've talked about the benchmarks, we always say, well, okay, a really good site, and it obviously depends on what they're selling, would be about 10% add to basket. Mm-hmm.
I think if I remember,
like 3.5.
Yeah, I think remember redoing the product page on that site, and it went from 3% to 7% overnight when it was changed. And literally a lot of that was just the stuff that's in the book, in the product checklist. It was just going through that.
Well, it was understanding. It was And the issue with this site was a lot of the traffic was coming from Google Shopping, and it was landing on the product page, and it was a dead end page. So they're typing in, gold lampshade, and it was only showing one gold lampshade, and obviously they need to see other lampshades.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that if you want to diagnose your conversion rate, you need to think about the flow through the site. So let's say you've got those three things: add to basket, basket to order, sorry, basket to checkout, checkout to order. So you've got those three things. Let's say you find out that it's a add to basket problem. And then really you're kind of trying to find the thing that's wrong within that area. So you think of those three things that we've got. And once you find that you know one of those three things is the problem, then you want to dive into that in a slightly more detail to actually uncover the problem within the problem. So like take the add to basket rate. So either if your add to basket rate's lower, either people are not staying on the page and completely unconvinced about the product that they want, so they're bouncing, or they're looking at the product thinking it's nice, but not adding it to the basket because of a slightly different reason. So what you really need to work out is at what point is the add to basket a problem? So you can see that by looking at your bounce rates. So if your bounce rates are too high, then that means that you've got an earlier add to basket problem. They're not getting to the point where they even consider adding it to the basket. So therefore, if you've got high bounce rates, you then need to look at the engagement of the site and getting people into the mindset they actually want to buy this product. But let's say you've got low bounce rates, but still a low add to basket rate, then you've got to start thinking about your product page. Is it organized? Is it giving them the right information? Because they're more interested. They're not bouncing. They are interested in it, but you're missing a few key bits of information that will give them the confidence to buy now. Say you're selling furniture, they might love that sideboard, but you might be missing some information to tell them exactly how big it is, and what material it's made out of. So they can't quite, they want to make sure it's not MDF or something like that. And so once you start hunting for your issue, you can then dive into that in a little more detail. And so the same thing.
This particular client found that they were driving a lot of people to Google Shopping, landing on the product page, and the bounce rate was like 86-87% on the product page. That was obviously massively too high. And the answer was bringing a lot more product onto the page, a lot more related products. So, rather than it just being one gold lampshade, you'd be saying, oh, here's all the other gold lampshades and here's all the other gold lamp and all the other categories. So you're encouraging them to click through and to browse a lot more. And that was the main thing. But then you're right.
If you think about lighting, traditionally with a lighting e-commerce model, we've been bringing them through the homepage, through AdWords, search AdWords. And so the thing is about lighting is that people aren't buying a light, they're buying a lifestyle. They're buying a finished event, a finished room that looks a certain way, that's going to make them feel a certain way. So if you just bring them to that product page and it's just a lamp on a white background and that's it, then you're not getting that experience of what the website is trying to create for people and giving them visions of it. So, when Google Shopping first came, a lot of people kind of thought, oh, well, they're still going to see the homepage. And I was like, well, no, they're not. The first page they're going to see is the product page. So how do you show them on that product page that you are creating a lifestyle for them and not just selling them a lamp? So therefore, your imagery has got to be slightly different. You've got to lift it. You've got to have stories on the product page. You've got to have videos. You've just got to lift it in terms of the lifestyle element to be able to kind of get them to buy into, like Mark and Ian's lighting store. And Mark and Ian's lighting store are known for creating these beautiful rooms with lighting. And it's not just about the lamp. It's about how that lamp fits into a whole ethos and a whole kind of thinking of something, and it's part of a bigger purpose, it's part of a bigger mission. So that's where you've got to be able to bring the job to be done, which we bang on about quite a lot in some of these podcasts, into the website, And they've got to be able to grasp that when they land on the product page. So if you're having a high bounce rate and you're selling aspirational products, it's often that you aren't creating that big picture job to be done mission kind of thing. So that your website should have a mission, and it should be obvious what that mission is when people land on it. So it's not just kind of, the mission isn't to sell you a lamp.
It's good. It falls generally into two camps. If you're selling a lifestyle product, it's more of an emotional sell, and what you're trying to actually create, you're selling that lifestyle. So it's about increasing desirability. Whereas if you're selling a problem-solving, rational purchase, something that's going to do a specific job that isn't particularly a lifestyle, it's like a car battery or a hammer or a tool set. You're actually trying to convince people so that it's the right product. So lifestyle products tend to be about increasing desirability, and problem-solving products tends to be about increasing the convincibility and agitating the problem. So going back to that example of the lighting company, we found that the ad to basket was low, so their conversion rate was really quite low, and it was because the ad to basket rate was like 3.5%. So that was a problem, and that was because the product, they were bouncing too high. So we needed to increase the amount of other products that we were showing on that page. And then the other problem was their basket to checkout was low. So we really want that to be, absolute, creme de la creme would be about 50%. So 50% of people who get to the basket then would go ahead and click proceed to checkout. And they were nowhere near that. They were like 22%. So only 22% of people who'd added to basket then took the next step and then clicked into the checkout. And that's way too low. And that tends to be because they're just not ready. There was no reason to buy. We hadn't actually done a good enough job. And they may well have been price checking, and they may well be going into the market, but we just weren't given the reason to act now. And that's where we start talking about the offer architecture. And I always think there's only two ways you can get people to buy now, and that is ultimately to give them an offer that you're going to take away, and put the element of scarcity there. So there's only a few left, low stock, don't miss out, and that can often be can be enough just to influence. But I think with the lighting company as well, there was that conversation around the dinner table, in the family, where you say, "Oh, I've had a look, look at these. Did you like these? I've seen these light, these table lamps and things. Do you like them?" And it was understanding that and how to influence.
Yeah, being able
that.
To share this basket with other people and things like that. Yeah. That's what people need to, when the people are buying something that is going to affect a lot of other people. You obviously got that. It's the humanistic buyer, isn't it? It's like, how are these products going to affect my whole family? And I need to get buy-in from other people. So you need to make it easier for that to happen.
And I think for the lighting company, it was definitely that they needed to go through that journey, and we needed to give them reason to act now. And I think for the problem solving rational purchase, so let's say you're selling car parts or something like that, it's very much a methodical thing. And you're selling other people's brands, because this particular example was selling other people's products. They were price checking. It was so obvious. They were going back into Google and they were seeing to get it cheaper and faster. And so we needed then to convince people on the basket that we had a price match promise, and there was an offer on, so don't miss out, it's going to run out. Basically just not giving them a reason to go elsewhere.
I think a lot of basket pages that I see, people do a lot of effort with their marketing, a lot of effort with their Facebook ads and Google Shopping, and then get people to the product page and it works. And then the basket page is almost like completely forgotten about. So either they have got some kind of little pop-up in the top right-hand side when someone adds the basket. And I think people choose to do that even when their quantity, their average quantity in the basket is one. So I've seen this quite a lot recently. So I'll go into Google Analytics, I'll pull a custom report and go, well, how many items people buying typically? And it's usually like, 1.1 or something on these sites. And then you look what happens when they add to the basket, and it just keeps them on the product page. And if you think about it, that's kind of dumb, isn't it? Because like they're only going to buy, I can't remember what it was. I mean, obviously the classic example is like a dress website. Women only really ever buy one dress. I can't remember who I was looking at the other day. There's definitely one on that one as well. It's one of the consultancy projects. So I'm just trying to think about it. Tripods. It was a very expensive tripod. And so basically when they buy that tripod, they're only buying one tripod. So the idea that we're going to go and magically create an upsell on the product page and then suddenly going to go, oh, I'll just get another tripod, it's just not going to happen. So you might as well take them to the basket page. And the trouble is with that is that when you start saying to people, oh, just take them to the basket page, the basket page is a completely naked page. It's almost like they've given up to say, oh, well, if people want it, they'll buy it. And it's like, well, no, because if you had a physical store and someone had put in an expensive tripod into their, was carrying it around the shop, and you were sitting there as a salesman, you wouldn't just go, all right, I'll leave them alone. You'd be like, well, those are the people I want to talk to the most, just to help them to the till, because I'm that, you know, as opposed to the people who are completely just browsing around the website, who haven't even around the shop, haven't even decided to buy. The people in the basket are obviously the people that are most likely to buy something, it's the equivalent of having
a great engaging conversation with somebody about, you know, trying to find the right product, and they want that one, and then just going, look, do you want it, mate? Otherwise, get out. You know, it's just like a blank functional page.
Well, imagine you go and buy shoes at the shoe shop, and then there's someone that helps you, and they go and get the shoes from the thing, and they try them on, and you go through a few different pages at shoes. And then you find the shoes you want, and they go, oh, do you want these? And go, yeah, I'll have these. And then they're buggering off and then going, you know, what they actually do is they pick the shoes up, and they lead you to the checkout, and they make sure that you get actually buy the product, buy the shoes, don't they? They don't just leave you. And so,
and there's,
you know,
a whole emotional thing that goes on. Do I need these shoes? Should I get these shoes? You know, well, I've got that dude that's coming up.
Don't they? He wants them. Great. Okay. Here, I'll, you know, and if you've been working with a salesman, they might like even take you to the front of the queue so that you don't have to queue with everybody else. And they just go, okay, I'll just do this on this other till for you, because you don't want to have to sit. You know, it's basically it's done. And whilst they're doing that, they're going, oh, I've got these shoes, I really love them. I've seen these are really popular, you'll like these. You know, there's reassurance that you've made the right choice. So on the basket page, we can't just leave them and expect them to kind of get themselves to the checkout. We have to actually make sure that we're dealing with their anxieties that might prop up, that if we sit them and let them wait, those ideas will pop into the head that they go, do they actually need this? Can I get this cheaper somewhere else? Is this quite right for me? Those kind of things. What if it takes too long to get delivered? All those things. So, you know, going back to this lighting shop, the first thing we would do is diagnose where in the process of the conversion, when from someone coming onto the site to actually buying something, is it weak? Where's the weakest link? And then we dive into that weakest link and we go, well, why is this weak? So let's say the checkout was the problem. The last step, maybe checkout to order was weak. You know, it does happen. We then go and say, right, okay, let's go and put some tracking on the checkout page, and let's work out where people are falling off on that checkout page. And you can say, oh, it's, you know, because we've had this before. Oh, it's because people forget their password and they can't log in and they just give up. You know, and then you can see that account login thing has got a really big drop off on the checkout page, and we'll fix that, and we're going to get an extra 10% of orders. You know, so it's really about going through the process, finding where the weakest point is. And it's like what we talk about before, it's like finding the lever within the lever within your business. Once you found the lever within the lever, then you're working on that. And let's say you fix all those and you're doing well, and now you've got your KPIs all working, and your add to basket's good, and your basket to checkout is good, and your checkout to order is good. Then it's a case of saying, well, now we add more traffic. Now we add more paid traffic, because whoever's running your AdWords who have, you know, been negativing out lots of keywords that didn't quite get the return on investment you wanted, you're suddenly saying to them, well, actually now, for every 100 people that come to the website, before we were converting 4% of them, but now we're converting 6 to 8% of them. So a lot of those keywords that you couldn't make work before, you can now go and bid on, because we can probably make them work because our conversion rate is a lot, lot higher. So it starts to become an enabler of things outside the website to be able to go and get more traffic. And a lot of the time, you know, people don't talk to the people running the AdWords and say to them, oh, by the way, we've increased the average order value. So those kind of things you've done before that didn't work might work now. There's often a bit of a disconnect between those two teams. So it's worth kind of reaching out to them and saying that, look, we've now increased our ad to basket rate considerably. Our conversion rate's a lot higher. So some of those things that you may have negatived out in the past might work now. So if you go and look at the historical data, and let's say you've got like a, say you've got a return on spend target of, you know, £10 in, £40 out, and that's what you've got to make work. You might have got something that only did 2.5 like before. And then you can add those back in. You can say, right, we can now make these work. And obviously, typically, there'll be more generic keywords. So, you know, you might work, you might sell at the moment on brass lighting, like day, you know, brass table lamp or something like that, something specific with floral black brass table lamp. But then you might be able to, you know, convert on brass lighting, which would be a more generic term, which is obviously going to have a lot more volume on it. So hopefully I'm getting across the general kind of methodology to it. And what
I'd just say is one thing I would say actually is the is that conversion rate is massively influenced by your repeat business percentage and your lifetime customer value. So if you've got big, yeah, you've got sites go, oh, I've got conversion rates of 6%, 7%. Well, it's probably because you've got existing customers coming back on buying. So the average conversion rate, I'd say, for a business that's recruiting, you know, predominantly recruiting new customers the first time, you know, really 1 or 2% is probably about right. But if you've got existing customers coming back and buying, then you should be aiming for 5-6% plus.
You know, actually, it's so a very good point, Ian, actually, because a lot of times you say to people, oh, I'm running your AdWords for you. What do you want to have your return on spend to be? And they'll go, oh, well, to make a profit on that product, we need to, you know, for every £10 we spend, we need to get 4 back. But if you've got a business where your lifetime value is actually a lot, lot higher because you've got these customers that are buying over and over and over again, you might want to actually recruit at a lower level because otherwise you can't recruit. So maybe you can't, let's say you need to get times 5 to make money on the first sale, but you actually over the lifetime of that customer, they're going to buy maybe 3 to 4 times a year. So you then go, well, actually, I know on average that a customer is actually someone who spends £30 on the first order. It's actually worth to me £150 in a year. So given that, and I've got the data to show it, then I probably might just scratch my back with the first order that comes in. And being armed with that information means that you have a lot better information than all your other competitors, because all your other competitors will just probably set their return on spend based on whether they make a profit on that product, not looking at their lifetime customer value. So calculating your lifetime customer value, especially for something like lighting or clothing or something where people might actually buy again, because you'll find with lighting that people might not buy again in 6 months or something like that. They might buy again very quickly. Because if you think about someone buying lighting, they're probably doing their house up. Maybe they've moved house, or maybe they're doing a room up, and they'll probably have that need to get stuff done in that room or in that project over the next 30 days. So you can probably quite quickly work out that customer is actually worth a little bit more to you than you're getting on the first sale. And if it might be quite significant, you can then say, well, actually, I can now have a return on spend of 2.5. And I know that my competitors are trying to hit 4. So I'm just going to completely clean up. because I know I've got better data. I can actually see what's actually going to happen. And you might find that certain SKUs, certain products lend themselves to repeat purchase more than others. And you can then start tagging those ones in your Google Shopping feed and saying, right, that's a high repeat purchase product. I'm going to pull those out and I'm going to bid those higher. And I'm going to actually say, I'm actually going to have a lower return on spend target on those products so that we can recruit with those. Because we know that typically when someone buys that lamp, they tend to buy the other things in the set. So therefore, let's go and push those a lot harder and recruit on those ones, as opposed to like the desktop lamp that people buy that. They only buy that. We never see them again. You know,
it's starting to get clever. The other thing to think about, I think the other thing to note about conversion rate is that, you know, one of the easiest ways to increase your conversion rate is turn off your traffic, you know, and it's like, that's obviously not right. So you have to think about conversion rate whilst getting more people to the site. You've got to, and in some cases, it's maintaining conversion rate, you know, whilst adding more traffic. And that can be the way to do it. You know,
well, can it's we really add 100,000 when you go and do exercise, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your heart rate. Can we add, if you stopped exercising, you know, your heart rate would come down and you'd be like, well, that's good. But
can we add 100,000 people to the site whilst maintaining the conversion rate of, you know, 3%? And, you know, because obviously if you want to get conversion rate of 6%, then you stop going after slightly less, you know, intent to buy traffic. So it's about it's about being able to invest in paid traffic and maintain a conversion rate that gives you the return on ad spend that you need. Yeah. It's a continual process. And, you know, depending on what level of business you're on, you know, in your first million, you'll have to do certain things of conversion. And then you want to scale from there, you'll have to do more.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we'll finish there. I think you've done very well to manage a podcast with a screaming baby in the background. I think this must be a marketing podcast first.
She has screamed her way around Knutsford. Honestly, I've had to put you on mute for about 25 minutes.
Anyway, thank you guys. Okay. We shall speak to you next week, hopefully without a screaming baby. But anyway,
bye.
Thank you very much. I'll see you all soon.
Bye.